Shalom, everybody. This is a modern-day Samaritan woman bringing to you another episode of Healing for the Nations. We are on a journey to the heart of our Father, and we are walking this journey together. It is a we program, and we are needing one another. We need to pray for one another. We need to encourage one another. So on this journey, we are walking the 12 Steps of Recovery. This is starting a new series on the 12 Steps of Recovery. And I want to remind you that you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me. I do now have my own YouTube channel, Healing for the Nations. And I will be doing live teachings. There are some videos on there that you can watch. I hope you are blessed by them. At the time of this recording, I and my team are planning a women's retreat to be held in Florida in February. And I would like to ask you if you would pray about this, to donate to the retreat, because retreats do cost money, and we would like to make this available to any woman, even those that are struggling financially. And so we need finances to cover the Airbnb. The Airbnb will be large enough to house the women and my team, and also the cost of food and gifts and scholarships for women that need to come to a healing retreat. So this retreat will be formed. It will be headed by myself and a Torah observant mental health therapist and another woman who is walking in truth. And she's an amazing woman, Juliet Van Heerden, and my team, my hospitality team. And it will be a small retreat, creating safe small spaces for women to come and to heal from their childhood wounds. Oh my goodness, so many of us carry so many different wounds. So I do have a PayPal account, and you can reach me through my Facebook page. You can reach me through my blog, which is called Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman .wordpress.com. You can also email me at moderndaysamaritan@gmail.com. Please note that Samaritan is spelled Samaritan. So I would really appreciate it if you would pray for me as I continue to step up into different places that the Father's calling me to minister, and I'm not really comfortable, but you know, it's the Father's leading us out of our comfort zones in order to be out into the world seeking the lost, providing, nurturing, and care. So it's called the Good Samaritan Women's Retreat. It will be held in February of 2023 in Florida. So I will be sharing more of that. We are doing fundraising, so please keep that in your prayers. I really appreciate it. So this show is step one. This is one of the first in a series on the 12 steps. I know in the past I've talked about the 12 steps of recovery, and I think it's really important, especially in these crazy times. Sometimes for me, I need to get back to the basics. So helping you helps me stay on course. And that's how the program works. So it's a we program. We cannot do this work alone. So I'm going to be sharing with you some different readings. The first one is taken from the National Association for Christian Recovery. And this is written by Dale and Juanita Ryan. And I highly recommend their website, the National Association for Christian Recovery. There's some really amazing resources on their website. So we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. Fill in the blank. We're powerless over our addiction. We're powerless over our sin nature. We're powerless over people, places, and things. And admitting that our lives had become unmanageable. Who cares to admit complete defeat? practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It is truly awful to admit that, glass in hand, we have warped our minds into such an obsession for destructive drinking that only an act of providence can remove it from us. But upon entering AA, we soon take quite another view of this absolute humiliation. We perceive that only through utter defeat are we able to take our first steps toward liberation and strength. Our admissions of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be a firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. That's taken from Alcoholics Anonymous, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. So please don't get caught up on the word alcohol, because this is across the board with any kind of addiction. And for those of you that have been following me for any length of time, you know that I prefer adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families, because in that fellowship and that support meetings, it's not about the alcohol or the drugs. It's not about the addiction. It's about the ism, the insane mind. It's about what happened. It's about what happened. It's about the trauma. So people in 12-step programs know that until you're hurting enough, the steps won't work for you. But for the fortunate sufferer, there comes a time when he or she says, I've got to get well. I can't stand living like this anymore. And that is when one is ready for the miracles of the 12 steps. So J. Keith Miller wrote that in his book called A Hunger for Healing. Students in most classrooms begin with easy lessons and gradually progress to more difficult ones. In the 12 steps, we begin with what some people experience is the most difficult lesson of all. No matter how powerful we may think we are not powerful enough on our own to do what we want and need to do. On the surface, it may seem like a simple lesson. There's nothing particularly complicated about it. Experience suggests, however, that it can be a very difficult lesson to learn. Alcoholics Anonymous makes this point simply in step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. It is not easy to admit powerlessness. All of us want to maintain the illusion that we can manage our lives on our own. Eventually, however, we must all face the fact that there is a gap between our intentions and our ability to carry them out. This gap shows up in different ways for each of us. We may intend to stop drinking, but find that we are unable to do so for more than short periods of time. We may want to stop turning to food every time we feel sad or anxious, but find ourselves eating far beyond what we intended. We may want to be more expressive of our deepest feelings, but find ourselves emotionally withdrawn. We may promise ourselves that we will spend more time with our children, but continue to allow work to take priority. All of these gaps between our intentions and our actions are evidence of powerlessness. We attempt to bridge the gap between our intentions and our behavior by trying harder to do things differently, but trying harder doesn't always work. In fact, sometimes the harder we try, the more unmanageable our lives become. 12-step programs begin with the admission that we cannot make the changes we need to make by using willpower alone. Whether we believe we are addicted or not, the lie that we are smart enough or competent enough or powerful enough to manage our lives on our own will eventually be shown for what it is, an attempt to play God. It takes courage to face our powerlessness, but the admission of powerlessness makes possible a dramatic change, spiritual change, in our lives. Step one, a closer look. We, the first word of step one, implies that healing takes place in community, not in isolation. This is not a new idea. two are better than one, because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the person who falls and has no one to help them up. Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10. The need for community is a major theme in biblical spirituality. God calls us to community, to close relationships with others. All of us are part of a family, God's family. That is why Jesus taught us to pray, "Our Father." Admitted. Spiritual kindergarten begins with the admission that we are in trouble. When we acknowledge this, we are ready to begin our spiritual journey toward peace and serenity. Admitting the truth is not something we can do casually. For most of us, it represents a major change in business as usual. We have learned pretense, evasion, and denial. Now we must learn to admit the truth. The Bible puts a high value on telling the truth. Each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor. Ephesians 4:25. The falsehood that we put off in step one is the belief that we do not need any help, that we can handle it, that we are managing our lives successfully on our own. In step one, we admit that this is not true. To our surprise, when we admit this truth, new and better ways of living become possible for us. We were powerless. Being powerless does not mean that we are incompetent or helpless or that we have no power at all. It means that we cannot rely on our own. It means that we cannot rely on our will alone to achieve wholeness and peace. Willpower alone is not powerful enough. We see our powerlessness when we try to solve a problem through willpower, by determination, commitment, and trying harder. But find that the changes we achieve are only temporary. We may try to control the drinking or drug use of someone we love, but trying harder, and trying our hardest will not make us powerful enough to achieve our objective. Or we may promise not to say yes to additional responsibilities, only to find ourselves taking on more and more obligations. If you have made promises, decisions, or choices, and then found that your determination and commitment were not powerful enough to achieve the desired results, then you know what it is to experience powerlessness. If you have experienced fear or anxiety that you are unable to manage, you know what it is to be powerless. If you hide behind defenses of one kind or another and cannot be at ease with yourself or others, you know what it is to be powerless. The Apostle Paul talked about powerlessness when he said, "I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out." Romans 7:18. Paul realized that the solution to his problem would need to involve more than just increased willpower. The central point of powerlessness is that willpower alone is not sufficient to enable us to make permanent changes. Trying harder didn't work for the Apostle Paul, and it doesn't work for us either. Over alcohol. The word alcohol in step one can be replaced with other substances or behaviors or conditions. Narcotics Anonymous, for example, replaces alcohol with our addiction. Some codependency groups replace it with other people's choices. Some Christians use the word sin or the effects of sin. The use of other words to replace alcohol allows anyone to use the 12 steps. The basic principles of the steps are the same no matter what substance or behavior may be the focus of our addictive process. Our lives have become unmanageable. What does it mean that our lives are unmanageable? It means that our efforts to manage our lives are not successful. We keep doing the things we think will solve our problems, only to find out that our solutions are often worse than our problems ever were. There is an old slogan in AA that summarizes this. I never had a problem that was worse than the old solution, I found for it. Our lives become unmanageable because our solutions make things worse. We may eat because we don't want to feel so depressed, but the reality is that compulsive eating makes us more depressed. We may act out sexually because we don't want to feel so lonely, only to find ourselves more alienated than ever. We may run up large debts by buying new clothes so that we will feel less shame, only to feel the added shame that our spending is out of control. Solutions like these do not satisfy us for extended periods of time. The problems always return in one form or another. The prophet Isaiah was on target when he asked, "Why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy?" Isaiah 55:2. Step 1 invites us to face the fact that our efforts to manage our lives have not worked. We will not be able to find better solutions until we have seen with clarity that our current solutions are part of the problem. So we're going to go on break. And when we come back, I'm going to continue with this topic on step 1. And I'm going to be sharing with you out of the complete Jewish Bible, Romans 7:14 through 25, and some other things that I have found on this step, on this topic, that may be beneficial, may be helpful to you. So we'll be right back after this break. Shalom. Welcome back, everybody. This is Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman. This is the second half of the show. If you missed the first half, you can go to Hebrew Nation Radio, look up the schedule, and you will find the other times that this show will air. Or you can go to the tab Deliverance, and you will find not just this show, but other shows that I have done in the past. And if you're not familiar with this program, this radio show, I talk about addictions and trauma and all sorts of different topics, such as narcissism, domestic violence. And so I invite you to also come to my blog. You can find a blog on Facebook, or you can go to Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman.wordpress.com. You can reach me by emailing me at moderndaysamaritan@gmail.com. And Samaritan is spelled Samaritan. And so this second half, we are going to continue to explore the topic of powerlessness and unmanageability. So I'm going to share with you from the Complete Jewish Bible, Romans 7, starting 14 through 25. And Paul says, "For we know that the Torah is of the Spirit, but as for me, I am bound to the old nature, sold to sin as a slave. I don't understand my own behavior. I don't do what I want to do. Instead, I do the very thing I hate. Now, if I'm doing what I don't want to do, I'm agreeing that the Torah is good. But now it is no longer the real me doing it, but the sin housed inside me. For I know that there is nothing good housed inside me, that is, inside my old nature. I can want what is good, but I can't do it. For I don't do the good I want. Instead, the evil that I don't want is what I do. What if I am doing, but if I am doing what the real me doesn't want, it is no longer the real me doing it, but the sin housed inside me. So I find it to be the rule, a kind of perverse Torah, that although I want to do what is good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner self, I completely agree with God's Torah. But in my various parts, I see a different Torah, one that battles with the Torah in my mind and makes me a prisoner of sin's Torah, which is operating in my various parts. What a miserable creature I am! Who will rescue me from this body bound for death? Thanks be to God, He will, through Yeshua, the Messiah, our Lord. to sum up, with my mind, I am a slave of God's Torah, but with my old nature, I am a slave of sin's Torah. Did you get that? That is the Rabbi Shaul, Paul, the apostle, the Pharisee of Pharisees. He studied the Torah all his life. He knew the Torah inside and out and upside and down. But yet he was human, just like you and just like me. Reminds me of that thorn in the flesh he kept asking the Father to remove, and the Father wouldn't remove that thorn in his flesh. I feel like the thorn in my flesh is the complex post-traumatic stress that I still deal with. And, you know, I've been really struggling lately. Maybe you have too, but I've been struggling. And I'm like, if I could just get away from myself, I would be okay. I just need a vacation from me. A World War me. Instead of World War III, it's World War me. So there's a spiritual battle going on all around us. And, you know, for some of us, you know, we work on the front lines and we really need your prayer. But you know, when you're dealing with frontline ministry, the warfare is pretty intense. So I also want to share with you, and this is taken out of the Life Recovery Bible. It's a New Living Translation. I wanted to share with you a meditation piece based on this passage of scripture I just shared with you. And this is all on self-perception. That's what it's called, self-perception. We may have begun to realize that we have character flaws that are beyond our control. Deep down inside, there is a sense of brokenness that is a constant reminder of our humanity. However, we will get to a place where our behavior is under control, and we will be able to maintain sobriety. But as long as we are in a human body, we will have to contend with our sinful nature. Paul said to himself, I know that nothing good lives in me. That is in my sinful nature. I want to do what is right, but I can't. I want to do what is good, but I don't. There is another power within me that is at war with my mind. This power makes me a slave to the sin that is still within me. King David described God's tenderness toward us because of our human condition. The Lord is like a father to his children, tender and compassionate to those who fear him. For he knows how weak we are. He remembers we are only dust. Psalm 103:13-15. No matter how far we progress, our sinful nature will always incline toward and be susceptible to the lure of our addiction. We can't afford to forget this or let down our guard. Sobriety is something we need to nurture for the rest of our life, one day at a time. But we also have a reason for great hope. By trusting Christ, the Messiah, and recognizing our helplessness against the power of sin, we open our life to the transforming power of God. So that is so true, and that is so good. It's such a good reminder. Maybe I'm not the only one that's struggling with all these things coming at me. Maybe you're like me and you wish you could have a vacation from yourself. I don't know. So there are some other things that I want to share with you. This is another reading entitled Self-Perception. And this is based on Romans 12, verse 1 and 2. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let him transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. So the meditation piece based on those scriptures that I just shared with you says, how many times have we wished that we could be someone else? Perhaps one reason we act out our addiction is that we hate ourselves. Self-hatred is often associated with an addictive compulsive personality. If we don't like who we are and feel helpless to change, we can be reassured in knowing that God has the power to change us dramatically. The Apostle Paul wrote, "I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all He's done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind He will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship Him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect." Paul tells us to avoid being like the world around us. If we copy the behavior and customs of this world, we will head straight towards selfish ways and destructive dependencies. Our part is to turn our will and our life over to His care. As we trust and obey Him, He will work changes in us and make us new people. God wants to change us from the inside out. As we are changed on the inside, we will begin to evidence those changes in our external attitudes and actions. We all have great potential for change, but we cannot do it under our own power. As we yield our life and will to God, we can depend on Him to renew our mind and heart. He will help us overcome our defects of character, transforming us from the inside out. Lastly, I want to share with you an article that I found on the website, and it's from Chabad. I don't believe in throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's some really good resources to glean from Big Brother Judah, and there's a couple of websites that I do love to glean from that they do follow Judaism, but they also have, like I said, some really beautiful things that they pull out of the Torah regarding recovering from addictions. So this is written by Rabbi Ben A, and it's called The Purpose of Our Disease. And this is actually based on this week's Torah portion, Re'eh. And I may be pronouncing that wrong, Re'eh. "See, I give you today both a blessing and a curse. The blessing will come when you obey the commandments. The curse will come if you disobey the commandments." Deuteronomy 11:26 through 28. The command to see means to focus the mind until one sees things clearly. It is God's call to the individual to seriously ponder the choice of good and evil, of blessing and curse, until it becomes as clear as something one has observed with his physical eyes. Why the need for such profound contemplation? Who needs to deliberate over whether or not he would like to choose a blessing over a curse? The choice is both natural and obvious. Even a fleeting and superficial assessment of the two options should be sufficient. The answer is that to understand the nature of the curse, one must look past its appearance at its face value. The curse is not what it appears at first glance to be, and to see this requires contemplation. Good exists for its own sake. It is intrinsically worthy. Evil is merely illusory shadow. What is the true nature of evil? Evil in and of itself has no substance or purpose. It exists only to provide the possibility of choice so that man can take credit for and appreciate the good he chooses. Thus, only because freedom of choice is essential to man's service of God has God created the appearance that good and evil are equally viable options. We need to see that each has its pros and cons and that each provides something for man that the other does not. In reality, however, there is no comparison between good and evil. Good is real, true, and everlasting. Good exists for its own sake. It is intrinsically worthy. Evil is merely illusory shadow. It's an illusion which creates the impression that there is another way. It is nothing more than a well-crafted decoy that has no other purpose than to give our choices meaning. This knowledge that the entire purpose of evil is only that it must be overcome by man makes our service of God much easier. But to perceive this truth, one must see. One must pierce through the illusion that evil exists in its own right and see that it is nothing more than a means to an end, to allow man to become truly closer to God. In choosing recovery over active addiction, we are not battling between two equal opposing forces. After all, choosing to give in to our disease is not an actual option. It's nothing more than a choice that exists in order to give meaning to our lives as sober people. Our lives are testimony to the fact that for us to choose sobriety is to choose a blessing, and that to choose a drink is to choose a curse. But the curse does not exist for its own sake. The curse itself has no other purpose than to give greater meaning and value to the blessing. In other words, the curse brought on by taking that first drink serves no true purpose. However, our sobriety gives us a sensitivity and appreciation that most other people will never know. Being clean, we are able to appreciate the simple, godly bliss of a sober day. Again, that was written by Rabbi Ben A. So, I don't know if I totally agree with everything that he had to say there, but the point being is we get to choose. And sometimes when a person is in active alcoholism or drug addiction, it is said that they have lost their ability to exercise their willpower. And I know when I was in the throes of my addiction, it did absolutely seem like I had no choice but to drink, but to drug. And unless a person has lived in the depths of an addictive lifestyle, they have no idea how powerful that craving, that overwhelming craving for the next hit, for the next drink can be. It's like a power, you know, it's like this evil power that just takes control of a person's choice. And, you know, it goes back to what Paul's saying is the very thing that he wants to do, he doesn't do. And the very thing he doesn't want to do, he keeps doing. And that's a great illustration, a great example of what living with an addiction is. It's like no matter how many times I tell myself that I'm not going to eat that chocolate cake, or I can just have a small bite, you know, a bite or two, you know, I obsess over that chocolate cake. You know, I obsess over that. And then I give, you know, it's like everything that I try to do to get that craving, that obsession for chocolate cake to go away, you know, I'll eat this, that, and the other, trying to avoid that chocolate cake. And oftentimes I'll end up not just eating, consuming a bunch of calories, you know, eating all these other foods to try to avoid eating that chocolate cake. I'll end up, you know, relapsing and having that piece of chocolate cake. And it's not just a bite or two. I will end up consuming like half the cake, you know, get into that shame and guilt and self-condemnation and self-hatred. You know, it's a very difficult thing to deal with a full-blown addiction. You know, I use chocolate cake as an illustration because my first so-called drug of choice was food. You know, I started out with an eating disorder, and then it blossomed into, you know, alcohol and pot and all sorts of street drugs. And so once I put the plug in the jug and put down the illegal drugs, you know, I returned back to food addiction. And my thing is, you know, food. There's comfort in food. And it's all about, you know, nurturing your soul and numbing out and just, you know, coping with life. And life is so incredibly stressful. So I hope today's show was edifying to you. I feel kind of rusty. I haven't been doing solo shows in a really long time. So I just want to pray for you. Father, I just lift up to you the listener. And Father, may they hear the message that you want to give to them through my feeble voice. Father, I just lift them up to you. You know their struggles. You know what they're struggling with, Father. You know their powerlessness. You know how unmanageable they're feeling inside and the chaos all around us, Father. And I just pray for peace. I pray for shalom, that they would find shalom, that they would find their healing. And because you are Jehovah Rapha. You are our healer. You are Jehovah Jireh. You are our provider. And we look forward to the day that our Mashiach returns to rule and to reign. So Father, I just ask for blessings of your peace. In the mighty name of Yeshua, I pray it. Amen. Until next time, brothers and sisters, I bid you shalom.